This is Elsbeth Magilton, one of your hosts for the Girls Code Lincoln podcast. In March 2020, our clubs, like organizations across the world, had to shut down. During that time, as we said goodbye to our girls without hugs or ceremony, we knew we still wanted to be there to support them. Focusing on confidence and life skills, we started the Empow Her presentation series. Our speakers met directly with our clubs online, and the talks are available on the Girls Code Lincoln YouTube channel. The speakers in the series have a variety of careers and backgrounds. We know that confidence and leadership skills matter in any industry. As our clubs started back up, and we plan to begin enrolling new students this summer, we still recognize the need for kids to hear from confident, underrepresented voices in our community, perhaps now more than ever. This spring, in conjunction with the Women Lead Conference, sponsored by the University of Nebraska Colleges of Business and Law, we're reviving the Empower Her series on the podcast. We've invited the speakers at this one-day conference to join Aucherty and I for interviews that will come out as standalone episodes in the Empower Her series. Aucherty couldn't be with us today, but I am delighted to welcome Dr. Gwendolyn Combs to the podcast. Dr. Combs is an associate professor of management in the College of Business. She is also the director for faculty diversity and inclusion in the office of the executive vice chancellor and coordinates the work of three chancellor's diversity commissions, the commissions on the status of people of color, the status of women, and on the status of gender and sexual identities. And we'll dive into what all of that means and explain what a chancellor's office does and what they do here in a bit. But for now, Dr. Combs, thanks for joining us here today.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm really excited about the opportunity to participate in the podcast. Yes. Hope I say something that is interesting and informative.
Oh, there's no way you won't. We're not worried about that at all. These are always such a great time. So as our listeners know, we have a lot of the same lineup of questions, and a lot of them are the same that we do in our regular monthly episodes. So we'll jump right in and start at the beginning. Childhood, where are you from?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's an easy question. Okay, so I'm a Southern girl, Southern woman at this point, but I was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee, which is kind of in the middle of the what we call like the Southern Delta region. So it's very hot, very humid in Memphis. And, it's the home of great barbecue and also now the headquarters for Federal Express. So Federal Express has a lot of influence in the city right now. But, I grew up there, left there to go to college and just never went back to resettle there.
When you were young and growing up, did you want to do what you do now?
No, I can absolutely say no. I did not think about working in education, definitely not in higher education at college level. But at the time that I grew up, for African Americans, one of the avenues to be better was education, and also being a teacher was something that was considered in the African American community as, a very, very good and respectable job. So, it was impressed upon me to kind of go to school. I was always going to college. That was something that I wanted to do. And major in education and be a teacher, elementary K through 12. But that was not something that I wanted to do. I wanted to do something more in relationship to the psychology area, primarily looking at child psychology, child psychiatry. That was not, teaching elementary school and high school was not one of the things that, really pushed my button.
So let's talk about education. My favorite question is always, what was the major the day you started college and what was it the day you graduated? But so answer that, but also tell us a little bit about your college experience as an undergrad.
Okay. Oddly enough, my major in college was the same from day one until the day I graduated. Now I did switch after graduating from college in terms of how I wanted to use that major. But my experience, I went to an all-women's college in Massachusetts, so it was the first time that, a lot of firsts for me in that area. first being kind of out of Tennessee, being really away from family, living for an extended period of time. And but my college experience was good. Introduced me to a lot of different types of people, a lot of different areas of exposure, and also it helped me to grow because I had to do some things on my own and to kind of create my own path because I was in a place that was unfamiliar. But I had lots of friends who were from everywhere, which was always very exciting. And I had a different mix of individuals that I was, engaging to as well. My community before college was primarily African American. And so going to college kind of thrust me into an environment that was, less African American and more majority individuals and persons who, had substantial income, substantial wealth. So, which I did not have substantial wealth. So, it helped me to enforce me to think about and to become comfortable in different types of environments. So after I graduated from college, when I went to college, psychology major all the way through, with the idea of going to medical school and being this child psychiatrist. But when I graduated, I had an opportunity to rethink. I took a job in the Boston area over the summer and really kind of liked that environment. I really kind of liked the corporate, and it was a pretty large organization, a huge corporate office. And they gave me an opportunity to do some things and to think of using psychology in a different way from the standpoint of helping organizations better engage and better utilize their employees. So motivation and looking at how work helps individuals to be motivated and to get the job done. So I decided then that I wouldn't go to medical school. I'd go to get an MBA. So I did that, and that's where things kind of change. Even with the MBA, my focus was really finance. That was my major. But I took a human resource management class, kind of like the last part of my first year, and things just began to click for me.
So
And
you went from psychology to finance. What was the, well, first of all, I want our listeners to acknowledge we're hitting STEM. That's math.
that's math.
That's math. There's always going to be math in business school.
Well, I was a math minor in
Oh,
college.
okay.
I was a math minor in college. In high school, had always, been good at math and science, actually. And so I decided that, MBAs, they're, really talking about kind of like the focus is usually either the finance part, the marketing part, or accounting. HR was not something really that was kind of like the main core, but I took a class as an elective, and I just loved it, and I could see very well where my psychology work would help me. My psychology studies would help me, because a lot of that is exactly that. And so I made the switch, and been happy ever since. So yeah, didn't want to be a financial analyst anymore.
Is that still how it looks in business school? Are there still sort of those three main tracks, or are there other focus areas that students can look at?
Those tracks are pretty much still there. Even when you look at our College of Business, you have those tracks: econ, finance, accounting, marketing, and management. And now we have supply chain management and entrepreneurship. So, yeah, the finance and marketing and accounting are going to be, always a part of, that business environment. But human resource management has grown a lot in terms of its importance to organizations. Organizations are learning that human capital piece is extremely valuable and really needs to be taken care of in order for the organization to be successful and to accomplish its goals. So it has come from being like kind of like an add-on for organizations to really being a strategic partner in the organization in terms of, how do we progress? Because, how do we do that? We do that through people. And so, the talents and skills that you're able to acquire through that human capital, through people, those are pretty important drivers for organizational success.
So I had definitely have more questions about internships, externships, and jobs and that college time of life. But quick for all of the kids, and I assume their parents know, but for the kids who might be listening, when you say human resources, what does that mean?
Human resources deals with the people that work in an organization. So it's determining first what work is, how work is going to be defined in the organization, determining how you're going to compensate or pay for that work, looking at the types of benefits that you offer, those things that are not necessarily mandated by law, but they are becoming, like a competitive advantage for organizations to be up to date in those types of areas. So everything dealing with the people component of the organization, hiring those persons, training and developing individuals, the performance evaluation piece, also looking at unionization is a part of, contractual employees are a part of the HR function. And, it's just everything dealing with the people. How are you going to get people in that you need? How are you going to retain those persons that are important to you? And, looking at market issues as well in terms of supply and demand. Sometimes, they're a surplus of a number of persons who have a particular skill, which can impact what you have to pay to get those people. So there's still some math involved in it as well, some analytics that are involved as well.
See, STEM. You gotta have that math. Love it. I'm always interested in experience-based learning. And so did you have any internships, externships, or first jobs that really, it sounds like you already had a job in between undergrad and graduate school that changed your course. Was there any other jobs or experiences that happened that really put you on the path that you're on now?
Well, yeah, all through college, summers were, I took summers as an opportunity. I never took summer classes. I always took the summers to kind of, look at different things. So I always worked during the summers, or, I had a, during one summer, I went abroad, had a study abroad opportunity. So I did that one summer, but just kind of expanding, what I received in the classroom. And plus just to have a break from the rigors of of studying and all those types of things. So I had a couple of jobs. Being a college student, sometimes those jobs were working with students, also in like Upward Bound programs. I did that for one summer, and then I also worked for a corporation one summer. Not necessarily in HR, but kind of getting an orientation to what their organization was like within the context of business. So, having those kinds of opportunities, in addition to what I was learning in school, really helped me to, to learn how to do a lot of things, learn how to research information, learn how to, be resourceful and creative in, participating in meetings and people asking your opinion. So, at that early age, to know that, if you're there, always be prepared, because you never know, what might come across the table. So if there were materials that were related to that meeting, I made sure that I read those. If there was something I didn't understand before I got there, I made sure that, I either asked somebody, or, we didn't have Google then, but you'll find some way of finding out what I didn't know. And I think that's important to develop that level of curiosity, and that level of having the ability to determine where your resources might lie and to use those resources.
I always love that advice because I have found it so fundamental in my own life, which is be prepared, right? Always be prepared, respect the time of the people you're meeting with by being prepared. And I think a really key one that I try and share with our students here is if you're not prepared, don't lie and pretend you are.
Absolutely.
Just own up to the fact.
It's kind of like students when they come and they haven't read the materials, and you ask a question. And sometimes I'll do a round robin where everybody has to say something in the class. You just can't sit back, and everybody has a turn. And so, I mean, invariably, they're just making
Yes.
it up. This off the cuff, they didn't read the material.
Right. Right. So if you can't be prepared, be honest.
But the key is to try to make that effort. You know, you may not be probably never totally prepared, but you know, at least be a parent prepared enough that you can understand what you're going into, and be able to make some connections perhaps while you're there and engaged in that particular event or process.
So we know we've talked a little bit about jobs, but I mean first professional job, like your first post MBA, which again for our younger listeners is a Master of Business Administration. It's a master's degree in business. And you, of course, you're Dr. Combs, so we know that you continued past your MBA too. So if you want to talk a little bit about your PhD journey to first job journey.
Well, first job journey out of the Master's in Business Administration program, the MBA, I went to work for a Fortune 500 company, and which was not unusual because the program that I was in was sponsored by that company and another number of other companies that, you know, they were trying to get more persons in business that look like me and look like some other people. So, you know, there were several consortia of colleges that participated in a program that was focused to, you know, increasing that pipeline. I was hired by General Mills, and you know, they make the Cheerios and the Wheaties and, you know, all of those cereals, Betty Crocker cake mix, Flowers. They also owned a number of subsidiary organizations like Red Lobster and some jewelry subsidiaries and so forth. So it was a big organization. So I went to work with them in the HR area, and you know, started out in what I look at now is like, you know, not a very exciting position. My job was to describe work. Okay, so I would work with the corporate office, the corporate headquarters office, you know, managers and directors to describe their work, to describe their jobs, so that we knew the qualifications for that work. We knew, you know, the responsibility of that work. All of that was laid out. So. And, you know, people see it as drudge work, and, you know, in many instances it is. But it's important work for HR because that's kind of like the base of what you do. And so I had an opportunity to work there, and it was good for me because I met just a lot of people. I met a lot of people. I learned a lot about the organization by looking at the type of work that was going on. It was my job to then describe that work and create the job description, the official job description of that work, determine what the pay level was going to be, you know, pay range for that work. So I got a chance to work with, you know, systems that allowed you to do that. Just a fabulous opportunity. And so it led for me then. I stayed in HR headquarters for 6 months. And then I was promoted to the manufacturing division, which is the bread and butter, you know, of that organization. So it was a good place to be. And it helped me then to learn more about the plant facilities, you know, the other offices that were out there. And I visited those and kind of doing some of the similar work. But it provided an opportunity for me, particularly in an HR field, to learn a number of aspects, you know, because all of the plants at that time were unionized. So I had an opportunity to think about contracts and, you know, all those types of things, and provide advice to, you know, to those offices in terms of recruiting persons outside of their areas. We did a lot of college recruiting, campus recruiting. So that really set me up for being successful in all the other bodies of HR that I ended up working in, and also for my position here. At the university, because I'm a human resource management professor. I teach in that area, which I teach classes like the baby classes, the intro classes to HR. I also teach one of the upper level classes for strategic HR. I taught talent acquisition, you know, the regulatory environment, looking at the laws and all of that, and also looking at diversity and inclusion areas for organization, which is really, really, you know, of importance now. Always has been, but, you know, recognized as being very important now for organizations. So Yeah, that first job was very pivotal for me. And I'm glad that I took the opportunity to not look at it only as, bottom level, bottom tier work in HR, but preparation for, doing something differently. I was able to have good mentors, in that organization. So, they put a lot into employees. So it created a mindset for me, that reality that you have to really invest in the persons that you bring in. You just can't see them as cogs in a wheel. You have to invest in those persons.
I love that. Where did you do your PhD?
Right here at the University of Nebraska. How I
You don't
got
know.
here is a different story.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how did you end up in Nebraska?
Well, my
From the South to the East Coast to the Midwest.
I know from the South, East Coast, Midwest. My fiance, I met him at when I went to graduate school in Washington University, that MBA in St. Louis. So he was there working on his doctorate. So I met him there. His assignment, the job that he took out of his PhD program, was here at the University in political science. So he was a political science professor. So the quick story is that, we had this long distance relationship, and phone bills were like $600 a month, and so it was like, hey, something's got to change.
For
So,
again, for the kids listening, you used to have to pay to call people who didn't live in your city.
yes, you did. You really did. And it was expensive. So, I was in, at the time we got married, I was at a plant location. I was transferred out there to get some experience. And so I was in Ohio, he was in Nebraska. And so, very different environment for him. He's a southerner too from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So, different environment for him. So, we had lots of conversations. And so, we were already engaged. And so, we said, hey, let's just move the wedding up. So, we did and got married in November of 1978. And so, I quit and came to Nebraska to be with him and to just kind of see what Nebraska had to offer for an HR person. So it was, yeah, but so came to Nebraska and again met some really, really good people here. HR as a profession is kind of hard to break into. I shopped around and shopped myself around and had some people who were helping to introduce me in places. So finding a person to find a mentor, find a sponsor. I always try to tell people that is extremely important because you're coming in cold sometimes, and someone who kind of knows the ropes and knows other people that they can connect you to is always helpful. I had persons say, well, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to help. I want to get this job on my own. And I'm going like, you would probably be the only person in the world who got a job on their own. Most people don't get a job on their own. So, it is no there, this it's no problem to have help because hopefully you pass that along as you get to where you're going, you play it forward and help other people as well. So, was there another part of your question? Did I hit it?
I think you hit it. I think
Okay.
you hit it. So, I do kind of want to dive into, we've talked a little bit about being a professor and what that looks like, and I want to hear about that part of your job. But I also think some of the higher ed administrative things for people who aren't in higher education, it's a lot of words and it's very confusing. What does it all mean? And so if you could tell us a little bit more about both your professorship and then also your administrative roles.
Okay. All right. So the professorship is, in some instances, it's kind of simple, but it's not. I mean, most professors come in, they're various levels. You start in as an assistant with the idea of, gaining promotion to associate, and then having tenure, which means that, your position is quote unquote guaranteed, if you want to say that, but, you don't have to worry about the fluctuations in jobs and markets as much. And then the final level is that of a full professor. So I'm like in that mid-range. They call us mid-career persons. But the type of work we do, the first one is research, and you're researching things that you feel are important. Nobody tells people what to research. You do that, you develop that interest as a PhD student while you're getting your degree. And typically, the work that you do is as an instructor is a continuation of that area, some variations, some different types of things, but it tends to be in the same area of interest. So we research lots of things. I research issues in relationship to diversity and organizational policies and practices around human resource management. What people like, what they look for in terms of employment opportunities. So talent management is a part of that as well. The other part is teaching, which most people is are familiar with. And that involves a lot of working to organize classes first to determine and where you're going to teach, because there is some flexibility in that, what courses you will teach. And then just trying to make your class the best class and give students the best information that they need when they would leave the university. So paying attention to what changes in your area. I teach HR has a lot to do with laws, so I have to really know about what's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission doing, what the Supreme Court has decided in terms of some legal perceptions, Department of Labor types of things. So you have to keep in contact with the legal aspect, then also the softer aspects in terms of what are organizations doing now in terms of wellness and well-being, and because you're teaching those things, because students have to know that when they get out and go to work in companies. My job is to not let them be unknowing. They may not know everything, but to at least have had a piece and to know what people are talking about when they go in. And the other part is service. So there are three prongs: research, teaching, and service. And the service component can encompass a number of things. It can be service to the profession, where you're reviewing for publications, reviewing articles of other professionals, faculty looking to publish. It could be doing stuff in the community. It could be committees with the college or the university. So those that's the professor side. Also, student engagement. Student engagement is extremely important to to get to know students, to help students however you can. Students have issues in life just like everybody else, and so you're helping them to navigate those things and also remain on track for their degree. The other part of my job is the administrative job, and so working in the Office of Diversity and Inclusion is it's very interesting. I research in diversity and inclusion in those areas, so it gives me an opportunity to kind of do some administrative work in that area. And probably every job I've had in HR, and I've had better than 20 years of experience in the HR area itself, working for companies and organizations. So, but in each of those jobs, that's been a component of the work, particularly acquiring persons from all over, from different backgrounds. So that's always been a part of the work. It's always been a part, and it's a passion for me. And one of the things is people need to pursue their passion. It makes work a lot easier. You enjoy doing it, and you enjoy doing it, and you stick to it. But the diversity piece is helping the university here to look at where we have gaps and deficits in areas from faculty to staff is my area, but student enrollment is also another area where we look at how we are servicing students and the types of students that have availability for education. Being a land grant institution, that's a very broad requirement for the University of Nebraska. And so for the faculty and staff side, looking at how we can get the best talent from faculty and staff from a number of different demographic groups. So we're looking at increasing diversity, enhancing diversity. There's a big push on enhancing diversity in STEM or STEM faculty. We have a group that I'm working with that that's the primary focus. That's the main focus, is how can we better our experience there as an institution. And on the other part, larger part, university, I help I counsel persons who are here as faculty and some staff, but primarily faculty, who may be, having to navigate some issues or misperceptions that are going on in their environment. So helping those things to be resolved. And also with the commissions are three diversity commissions that report to the chancellor. They've been on campus for a number of years with some, ebbs and flows of their participation. But right now we're working with those commissions to do collaborative work. And it's Commission on the Status of Women, Gender and Sexual Identity, and People of Color, faculty members and staff members of color, to have them work collaboratively in the work so that there are some economies that can be accomplished by all three of the groups. Not you having a program, you having a program, and really could have had those programs together and touched a lot more people. And also, looking at expenditure of resources too, but also the effectiveness of those groups. And they have direct report to the chancellor. I work in coordinating, their activities and with the chancellor's office, but they can call the chancellor. They have a meeting with the chancellor, the chairs of those commissions later this month. So, they have that capability to let him know what they are hearing on campus so that things can be adjusted and can be resolved. That's their role. They're like the ears of the chancellor for, for the areas.
Yeah, and our chancellor is sort of our boss for our campus, right? So our
Absolutely.
entire university system, we have campuses in Lincoln and Omaha and the medical center and in Kearney, and there's a president for the whole system, but each one of those locations has a chancellor who
Absolutely.
sort of is the
It's a chief
leader.
CEO,
Yeah.
the
So when they have direct line to the chancellor, that means something. That's
That's
important.
pretty big contact, for sure.
Right. So I always like to ask, this is the fill in the blank round of the interview as we get close to the end, which is the best, hardest, scariest, and most rewarding. And this can come from being a professor, this can come from the administrative work, this can come from any part of your career right now. But what is the best part of your career?
The best part of my career, I've always had a great time in HR because, learning that, that's what I love. That's, what I really focus on because it's important to me. So the best part of my career for me is having had the ability to participate and help organizations and employees in an area that I love. I enjoy the work. So as I said, I tell students all the time, find a job that you like, find an area that you enjoy, because you will spend a lot of time getting ready for, prepping for, participating in that work. And if you don't like what you're doing, and I've experienced people who, and I've had a position that I did not like what I was doing, and that's hard. It's hard for you to maintain your motivation and your focus because it's just not, it's not something that you enjoy doing. Now, I know that sometimes we do work that we don't enjoy because we have to. We all like to eat. We all like to live in a place that's conducive to to our well-being. So, I recognize that sometimes you do things because you need to. It's a necessity. But if you can, to try to find that thing that suits your passion, and that's what I've had the ability to do. So that is, that's the best thing about the educational process was not always the best thing to get there. PhD is hard work. Master's program is hard work, but it is worth it. It is worth it. To be a professor is one of the best positions I've ever had throughout my working career.
What is the hardest part of your job?
Hardest part is sometimes time management because there's so many things that are interesting. There's so many things that you want to tackle and you want to contribute to, so sometimes you have to manage your time. I also do presentations to groups and things like that, and that's spreading the education and the information beyond just the university and the institution. But sometimes you have to learn, to say no. And when you don't say no, you find yourself in this this thing of serious area of anxiety because you're trying to funnel so many things and get so many things accomplished. So that's the hardest thing for me. And also, I would say second would be to do the work to to connect with students, you know, to do the work that connects mm-hmm. with students, especially if you're in an online environment. That's particularly hard to do. So, you know, you try to do some things that are different, things that are fun, you know, to try to help them connect as students and also connect with you as a professor. Because if they don't connect with you when they need help, they probably won't come to you. So, scariest thing? Ooh.
Scariest, yeah.
I don't know what the scare. Probably retirement. It's the scariest thing. Yeah, you know, not working anymore. But I guess the scariest thing would be that time where I felt that I couldn't be relevant in the work, you know. So it's like, so for that reason, I do a lot to keep informed and, you know, to read things that are important, to talk to other people who are working in HR, not just, you know, from a professor standpoint, but what are people in the industry actually dealing with right now? What's important for them? Because you know, I can then bring that back to the students. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it helps them to be better informed as well. So, not being relevant, not having the capacity to be, you know, to be relevant. That's scary. Yeah.
I always like the idea of you're always relevant if you're helping people.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the most rewarding part of your career?
Helping people. I knew you just got the other right down here. You know, as I looked at those questions prior to our conversation, is, you know, what is it about it that keeps me here? And it is. It's you know, everything that I've done professionally, in terms of service, even the research I do is helping people, helping organizations to do it better, you know, mm-hmm. or to consider things that perhaps have not been considered in their ability to try to service whatever the service or the product is. We know that, you know, profit is a part of it, but we also have a number of nonprofits too that are organizations in their own right. You know, that are working very hard to stay afloat and to also provide the service that they need, that their clients need. So, to be able to contribute to that is extremely rewarding for me. Yeah.
I always like to end with inspiring and inspiration and thinking about the best advice that we can give to others. But in my mind, the best place to start when you start thinking about how we inspire others is to talk about a big fail. I don't think people talk about failures enough. I particularly mm-hmm. don't think women talk about failures enough. Mm-hmm. And so I always want to ask everyone who's just the amazing guests that we've had on the show who have accomplished so much and do so much. I want people who are listening to hear that we've all failed too. And it's a part of being a human, right? So tell us about a big fail in your life.
I thought about that and looking at your questions and what might be helpful here. But a huge failure for me that I think about from time to time. And it's even to the point that when the time of year that occurred, when it comes around, I think about that sometimes, you know. But I took a job that was not for me. And it was a position that, and I won't go into all the particulars because, you know, some people are still alive, but, you know, it was a job that just wasn't for me. The environment, the culture was not something that was a part of my value system, but it was a very high level position and it was a visible position. So, in a good career move, it was a good career move. But, you know, sometimes a career move is not necessarily what you need at the time. And that's where I found myself. And so, you know, to me, it was a failure because the end result of that was not a happy result. It was not a pleasurable result. And so, you know, I was able to extricate myself from that. Yeah, it took a while after that, though, to kind of reconcile with myself what happened there. And why did it end the way that it did? And what was my contribution? What was the contribution of other people to that end? And I just and that helped me to know that. And I've had other positions like that offered to me, and my response is categorically no. I don't even think about it. I don't try to rationalize, well, what could I do? That just is not an environment where I thrive. It's not a value confirming area for me. And so I just, no, it was hard. It was very challenging, very difficult to accept that failure on my part, because I'm kind of a perfectionist, and but I learned from that one area that absolutely does not work for me. So, why put yourself in that environment and go
Yeah.
through that trauma? And it
Learn
was
from it.
hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn from it and move on. Absolutely.
So tell us about a big success in your life.
The big success for me, job-wise, I mean, I've had some personal ones, but kind of job-wise is making the switch from corporate to academic. That was a huge success for me, because it allows me to do both of those things, and it helps me to kind of push forward that need, I guess, that I have. And some people have said, that's a need of mine to help people to try to create positive environments for people. And so doing that for students. I also coordinate another non administrative group of faculty. And it's just it's one of the best places that I could have come, using my experiences, all the background stuff that's come, that I've been able to experience. It's really a good culmination of all of those. So for me, yeah. So yeah, I tell people all the time, best gig you could have. You work hard, and you don't necessarily have a conventional work schedule. It's not an 8 to 5 kind of job, but very rewarding. Very rewarding.
All right. Any final thoughts or the best piece of advice you have for young women finding their way?
Well, two things. Yeah, thought about this one too. That's why I wanted to get myself with your question so I could have a hopefully good response. But two things. One, and I've said this before, learn what drives you. And you can do some of that at an early age, high school age, definitely doing college, or if you're not in college, doing those early years. Find what resonates with you in terms of not only work, but those extra things that you do, community service, organizations that you might work with. Find out what resonates with you. And what's your passion? What are you passionate about? What types of things that you might hear about and you get excited, when you're a part of those types of things? Because to me, it does make life easier. And it tends to allow you to contribute more. And I'm always been one, my parents raised us to always give back, to not just be a consumer or a taker, but to always be in a position when you can to give back, to help someone else, to play it forward, and you can do that a lot easier when you're doing something that you love, when you're engaged in something, whether it's personal, whether it's professional, whether it's based in terms of the community. You can always do a much better job and be happier doing it if it's something that meets your values, aligns with your values, and something that you love. And the other is to surround yourself with people, all of them you may not like, but surround yourself with people who you can learn from, and it doesn't have to be those grand things that you learn. You may learn one little thing from someone that really helps you to navigate your world and to be successful in the things that that you're here to do. And I just think that we all have a purpose, and it helps you find that purpose. But don't be afraid to go up and somebody you want to meet. Go up and introduce yourself to that person. And people kind of like that. Oh, this person wants to meet me. Really?
Yeah.
So, you know, it feeds their ego, but it also gives you an opportunity to, to learn some things from people, or you never know. And I've had this experience where I met a person early on in my life, but at a later point in my life, that person, kind of that relationship comes about again. And it's in an environment where it's conducive to, just a really positive experience for both persons. So, yeah, and never burn bridges. Always be nice, always be kind, always be respectful.
Perfect. I love all of that advice. And I think our listeners could really take a lot of that with them into their day-to-day lives, even now, before they're in college or even in high
Yes,
school
yes,
and thinking
yes,
about that.
yeah.
And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. And thank you to Lysandra Marquez, a Girls Code Lincoln volunteer and the technical producer of this podcast. Our theme music is Then It Went Like by Grace Mesa. Want to hear more from women in coding and business? Tell your friends about this podcast and share it on social media. Word of mouth is our best advertising. Girls Code Lincoln is a 501c3 nonprofit organization in Lincoln, Nebraska, where we strive to ignite passion for technology and leadership in young girls with the long-term goal of closing the gender gap in STEM. Learn more at girlscodelincoln.org. Thanks to Girls Code Lincoln sponsors, including Fuse Coworking for our beautiful space, the Nebraska Governance and Technology Center at the University of Nebraska for Technical Services, and Mentors Foundation, Huddle, Assurity, Emeritus, and Don't Panic Labs for their organizational support.